May the 4th be with you. It is Star Wars Day. Happy Star Wars Day to anyone and everyone out there. The Kenobi trailer dropped, the official, not the teaser. We have the Book of Boba Fett Disney Gallery. And today we ask the question, what is the best year in Star Wars history? All that and more here on Chatooine. Would it be a Chatooine episode if I didn't fuck up something?
No.
Good job. I mean,
truly.
No.
Exactly. How are you guys on this wonderful May the 4th?
I am doing very well. I'm hungry, though. But I did have a free pizza for lunch, which was very nice.
Nothing beats free.
Good. I'm going to watch episode 9 tonight to celebrate.
Oh, God.
And eat.
What are you watching?
Up.
Episode 9.
Oh. I haven't watched a Star Wars movie in a while, dude. I just realized that. I was like, it's been a few months. I used to like watch one like every month.
I was watching a bit of Attack of the Clones earlier today, and it is not good. It is not
actually
well.
I technically have been watching Attack of the Clones and Phantom Menace with my overanalyzing series, but I watch a fifth of it at a time. So
that makes sense.
I don't know if that counts. But...
Attack is still better than Phantom Menace. Change my mind.
It's such a weird debate, right? That is a weird one. Like, which one's worse?
I prefer Attack of the Clones. I think.
See, and I know in our rankings, I put Phantom Menace above Attack of the Clones, but I can. It's weird because when Attack of the Clones came out, everyone was like, "Oh, at least it's better than Phantom Menace." But like looking back, I mean, Phantom Menace is like Lucas Star Wars to me more so than Attack of the Clones.
Production wise, Phantom is better, but story wise, I think Attack of the Clones has a stronger just overall story.
Are awful story wise.
There's something I appreciate more about the Phantom Menace because it's more unique. You know, you got Jake Lloyd, you got Liam Neeson, and it just looks different because it's on film. While Attack of the Clones is like just a worse version about everything than that's in Revenge of the Sith. So it's tough.
That's a very good point. It feels like Revenge of the Sith was like the one where you got to it. You're like, finally, something worth watching. But
yeah.
We here on Chatooine are also worth watching. So if you guys are watching, please leave a like on the stream. Subscribe to the official Chatooine channel if you haven't. Everyone's channels is in the links in the description below. And don't forget, if you're listening on Spotify, I'm sorry, we've had issues with Anchor uploading some of the podcasts of the past two episodes, but should be fixed now. Leave us a 5-star review if you are listening to us on Spotify. And be honest. Tell us what you like, what you dislike. What do you want to see from Chatooine in the future? We have a bright future this year for Star Wars because, I mean, there's so much shit coming out. We got the Obi-Wan trailer that just dropped today. And the like official show comes out. What do we get? 2 episodes in one day?
Yep, on the 27th.
Month, which is so weird because it's in the middle of Celebration. So I don't know how all that's going to work. Like, I'm sure it's going to be a big deal at Celebration, but I just wonder what the marketing is going to be like that week.
We'll see. But, you know, this is a bit of it's about Obi-Wan, but I have a renowned hope that the episodes will come out every Friday instead of Wednesday. And that's because they posted this thing called, it's like Obi-Wan Wednesdays.
Yeah.
And they said every Wednesday they're going to reveal like new toys and stuff. And they said they were going every Wednesday up until June 29th. And June 29th is the week after the finale of Obi-Wan, whether it be on Wednesday or Friday. So I think it makes more sense that they have Obi-Wan Wednesdays 2 days before the episode comes out. So it's like, say episode 3 comes out on Friday. Then the following Wednesday, they have toys from episode 3. And then Friday, episode 4 comes out. I think that makes more sense instead of having the toys come out on the same day. That's just how my brain works. And then the last one comes out a week after.
Yeah, unless Obi-Wan Wednesdays is just the overall term for the show's going to come out on Wednesday and the toys and stuff. So it's is Obi-Wan.
But in the article, they didn't say anything about the episodes coming out on Wednesday. They don't know yet.
Let's be honest here.
Yeah, it really seems up in the air since they came out with that like announcement that like all the shows are going to release on Wednesdays going forward and the movie's coming out on Friday. And then we have this situation where it's like, oh, it's going to come out on Wednesday. Actually, no, it's not. The first two episodes are dropping on Friday. Mm-hmm. So I personally think like this person, Mr. Baker, that it is mostly going to release on Wednesdays after that initial Friday, just because, I mean, didn't they do that for like the first episode of The Mandalorian? It dropped November 12th or 19th. Yeah. They dropped it on Friday.
They released it on a Tuesday. And then I think the rest were on Friday. That is true.
Oh, you're right. You're right. I just knew it, like that first and second episode were extremely close together. And I was thinking that they may do the same thing for this.
The only reason I think that's a little different, and this is just me maybe being blinded by hope, is because that first Tuesday was the launch of Disney Plus.
You're right. Yeah, Mandalorian was supposed to be like the big deal of the time. And plus, like with Obi-Wan, what's it, only 6 episodes? Could you really imagine them doing, dropping it Friday and 2 episodes come out on the 27th, and then next Wednesday they drop it the 3rd episode, and then you are halfway done with the series? You only have it for the rest of June? So it's kind of
you're right.
An odd situation.
That you're right.
Up in the air.
My mental health is at stake in terms of whether it's Wednesday or Friday.
Same. Well, it is Mental Health Awareness Month, so please send everything you can to Goldman. Your small donation can help people like us here on Chatooine, because we're only here because we have mental issues. But Kenobi also has mental issues in this trailer. I mean, what did you guys think about when you saw this? I mean, it looks beautiful. I mean, I can see some Deborah Chow influence from like the first or second. What'd she do? I think it was the
third
third and sixth or seventh. How many episodes were in that first season?
No,
it was eight episodes in the first season. So she did number 7, right? And then number 3. Okay,
I know she did number 3.
She did the second to last one for sure. I think she did second to last one. Okay, whichever Taika didn't do.
Taika did the last one.
Yeah, this looks good to me. I mean, this is, in my opinion, kind of a better trailer than what we had from the teaser. I mean, even the Grand Inquisitor right here looks a lot better than what he initially looked like.
His face looks more defined, I'd say.
It's all about angles. Yes.
That's a very good point. It is about angles.
Yeah, this is a far-out shot.
His head isn't as big. It's not like it's Megamind still, but it's not as big as Megamind. But you know, Goldman, start us off. What was your initial reaction when you saw today's trailer?
Nothing much. There were a few aspects I really liked when Obi-Wan says we have to train the boy, and Owen's like, what does he say? Just like the way you trained your father or his father. Mm-hmm. I was like, damn, like that's what I want. I want that. I don't know how to describe a tension between Obi-Wan and Owen. One of the aspects of this show that I'm really looking forward to is Owen actually having a character and like fleshing him out, because we see him a bit in episode 4, right? But not much. He's kind of just the grumpy old man. And then in the prequels, he doesn't have a character. He just stands there. And Joel Edgerton is a fantastic actor. So Lucas got incredibly lucky that he hired a guy to play a no-name character or a non-important character, and to have that actor end up being a good actor. So I'm very excited to see just him in general. And then at the end of the trailer, the last shot of the trailer, you know, they have just before they have the cybernetics put on Vader, and then you see Obi-Wan just stare at the camera. I'm very excited to see the moment where Obi-Wan finds out that Vader is still alive. I'm assuming that's going to happen. I'm assuming the series is going to begin and Obi-Wan won't know that Anakin is still alive. And if they do, that's a huge missed opportunity. But I guess going 10 years without hearing the name Vader, I don't know. But this trailer mostly showed a lot of the same things we've already seen. That shot is cool, though, with like the mugshot of Obi-Wan. It just makes me feel bad. I was like, Obi-Wan's like a good guy, and now everyone's trying to kill him. It makes me feel bad for the Jedi. Like, that's one thing the Revenge of the Sith did really well. Even though I hate a lot of the Jedi, I was like, man, I kind of feel bad for them. They don't deserve this. But
yeah, I didn't feel that from Revenge of the Sith, but I do hope this kind of does that. I mean, mainly with the character of Obi-Wan. I mean, it's hard to not sympathize with him at this point. Yeah. I mean, he has lost everything. And if you look at the Clone Wars, it's even worse with the death of Satine, the woman he loved. And, you know, Anakin falls to the dark side. I like what you said about him finding out.
Yeah,
like finding out that Vader's still alive.
All of the main characters in Star Wars have been through such immense pain. Like Anakin, Obi-Wan, Luke, Han, Leia, Rey. Like, they've all just been through so much pain. So we're going to see that in the show, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. I mean, this looks great. This looks a lot better than what I thought. I'm not going to say I thought I would expect from the series, because it was coming from Deborah Chow. But something about the show hasn't really captured my attention just yet. And this does a little bit of a better job. I mean, thinking about the bounty hunters coming after him, seeing what's the guy's name who's playing that Jedi right there?
Kumail Nanjiani?
Kumail. He's a very good actor, and I'm kind of excited to see him as a Jedi. I think It might be spoiler territory, but I know he likely dies. I mean, I'm pretty confident he's going to die.
I was going to say something, but I'm not going to say anything.
Yeah, I'm pretty confident he's going to die. And I think there was something about him like having the lightsaber and like eventually losing it. Just seeing another Jedi in this, I think, is going to be kind of cool. Having Obi-Wan have that interaction with somebody who was part of the Order and has seen it fall as well as Obi-Wan did. But also, I remember growing up, there was these like kind of young adult novels in Star Wars about a Jedi who went to Obi-Wan, who was younger, and was like, hey, like, I'm trying to get the Order back together. We're trying to take on the Sith. Do you want to join us? And Obi-Wan was initially like, no, you know, I need to take care of Luke, and, you know, I have responsibilities here, and, you know, this is, we should just hide. And then eventually, like, they kind of, due to circumstances, he goes out and he, like, you know, helps him out. But eventually he kind of takes a backseat, goes back to Tatooine, and then the rest of the book series is about the Jedi trying to take on the Emperor and Vader. That's a really cool way to, I think, start a story. And I don't think they're going to do that here in the Kenobi series, but there's that possibility in a way to do what they have done with the other Star Wars series and have a spinoff stem from this. But Palpatine memes, have you seen today's trailer? If you did, what did you think about it?
I've seen it like 20 times already. I'm just at work, like, because it's only like a minute and a half. So I'm like at work, just chilling, just keep replaying it. No, this trailer actually surprised me. I think I agree whenever you say that it's a better trailer than the first one, but I do think the first one had much stronger music to it. So that's kind of where I'm at there. What surprised me the most and what got me more excited for is Reva, because I'm really curious to see what she does, because, you know, I think she's going to be pretty brutal in this show. You know, we hear her yelling about Kenobi and stuff in this one, because I know there's like a lot of, I've already seen some controversy about her, people thinking she's going to beat Vader and all that. I'm like, you guys are dumb for thinking that. They would never do that, so stop. I think Reva's going to die at the end. I think it might be something like Fallen Order, where, what's her name? Trilla? Is it Trilla?
Yeah.
Yeah, where she dies by Vader. Yeah, it's Trilla. I feel like that's going to happen this one. I don't know. I'm just guessing. But seeing Vader's suit come together at the end, that was pretty sick. But overall, I think it's like on the same for me when it comes to the first trailer and this one. I thought this one could have shown a little bit more to it. But the best part about this trailer, in my opinion, is this scene that just played here, which is Uncle Owen and Obi-Wan having that discussion about Luke. Because I think that's going to be a huge focus of this show. Is I think how they're going to do it is the fans are kind of, they're going to show the audience kind of sympathizing with both Owen and Obi-Wan at the same time, because it's like you can't blame Obi-Wan for continuing his task of training Luke, but at the same time you cannot at all blame Uncle Owen for being like, no, look what the Jedi did to the galaxy, and look at what you're doing now. You're bringing in these hunters, now they're trying to find Luke. You kind of sympathize with both parties, and so I am curious on how the writers help them kind of come almost to like a common ground. Cause even in A New Hope, Uncle Owen still is kind of iffy on Obi-Wan. So I'm curious and see how the writer kind of brings that together and helps them find common ground. But
that's a good point. I mean, Joby Harold is the writer for this series, and I don't know much about him. He took over the scripts from a scene nominee, which those were apparently too much like The Mandalorian, where they're protecting Grogu and only Grogu, or not Grogu, Luke, which is going to be kind of like Mando protecting Grogu. They didn't want that similarity. But I mean, I agree with what you say about Uncle Owen kind of sympathizing with him, because I think at the end of the day, they both want what's best for Luke. Mm-hmm. And I love the line that he says of like you know, taught his father or raised his father or whatever. Like
taught his father, yeah.
That's trained. I mean, that hits, because it's like, you know, he got to see Anakin. He saw Anakin being this kind of, you know, 19-year-old boy, you know, Padawan. And I mean, did he ever really meet Obi-Wan until he gave him Luke? I'm not sure if they met before that. So yeah, he shows up and he's like, hey, you don't know me, but I taught Anakin. This is his kid. The entire galaxy has fallen, and, you know, protect him. And then he sticks around and wants to, like, you know, help raise him.
Kind of spying on him. Train him.
Yeah, and I mean, it's good to have that protector around and protection, but you would sympathize with Uncle Owen.
The problem is that protector, Obi-Wan being the protector, is now drawing in these forces of enemies.
Exactly.
Because they want to kill Obi-Wan, and that's a very, like, in my opinion, that's a really cool sort of conflict to go on between the heroes or the main characters of this series. But I think what's so great is that shot of Obi-Wan right after Owen hits him with that, hey, well, you trained Anakin, look what happened to him. And he just looks down. It's like, man, Obi-Wan's been through some shit, man. He's and he knows it too. Obi-Wan's like, yeah, I screwed up in a lot of ways and stuff. And is that kind of happened with Luke, you know? So
no, I thought that was great. I have a bunch of interesting questions going into the show. None of that are really like plot holes, but just things that have crossed my mind. Like, how much does Owen know about Anakin? Like, does Owen know that Anakin is now Darth Vader? Or did Owen just know that Anakin died and maybe did something bad?
Because
it seems like he has to, because he says, yeah, like he trained him.
No, no, in A New Hope, whenever she says, he's so much like his father, and he goes, that's what I'm afraid of. So he knows.
They could just think that his son is, or that Anakin was reckless, but...
Sure. Probably. I mean, yeah, you can infer it that way, but I think with the overall context of the rest of the original trilogy, it's like, okay, he knew Vader was his father.
That's true. Yeah,
that's just kind of
It does seem like he knows that he eventually was Vader, but maybe he learns that at the same time that Kenobi does, or from Kenobi. I mean, there's that possibility. Or maybe he just kind of internally knows. He's like, Darth Vader, bet that that's little bitch Anakin from all those years ago. That's what I would think.
Sandman.
Oh, God, yeah, just throw some sand in his face.
That's another interesting thing. So in this series, right, they're clearly... So they know that Obi-Wan is alive. Like, they're searching for his picture right now. They're trying to find Obi-Wan. At the end of the series, he's going to have to go back to Tatooine and be alive. So it's like, at some point, do they just give up on the search, even though they go to Tatooine? Or do they only go to Tatooine because they think there's another Jedi and they don't realize
Obi-Wan's there? So it does seem like they found him, like, at the very end when there's that shot of, like, his face. See if I can skip to it. It seems like they...
I would tell you, Goldman. I think he'll be happy with the answer. I think.
I hope it's good, because you don't want it to be where he is captured, taken to Vader or something like that. Like, they know he's from Tatooine, and they're like, well, I guess he didn't return there. And, I mean, I think Vader, if Vader knew he was on Tatooine, he probably would have a strong inclination on why.
I gotta be careful here. From what I've heard, there's a separate reason why those people are on Tatooine.
Well, yeah, it's for the other Jedi, the one they fucking kill. I'm sure it's Kamal or whatever the hell his name is. Like,
so Obi-Wan's not there. They don't see him on Tatooine at all. They don't know.
Yes. I'm sure they're hunting him, and like he is like on Coruscant or like on another planet, and that's when like the bounty hunters start going after him, and that's how like they run into him and find him. But to what Goldman's saying, like him going back to Tatooine, to me, what's so weird about this show and why I feel like I haven't been that excited about it, what interests me about this is seeing Obi-Wan deal with the fall of the Jedi Order personally, because, I mean, compared to Yoda and Mace Windu, it seems like those three, him, Obi-Wan, Yoda, and Mace Windu, all three of them are kind of the most responsible for what happened here. And I'm sure he has to feel that in some capacity. Mm-hmm. And that interaction he has with Uncle Owen, that interactions that he's, you know, right here where he's just looking at Luke from afar, I'm sure he feels a lot of guilt. And I want to see this. I want to see him go through the struggle of kind of coping with the fall of the Jedi Order, thinking about what to do next, or just being in an exile. I mean, there are people who just unfortunately live lives that are just unpleasant. I mean, that has been the history of humankind, and seeing that happen to a character we love and know so dear like Obi-Wan, it's integral to me. But what makes this show weird is, you know, balancing that. And then, by the way, he is being chased by the Inquisitors. He fights Vader in a rematch. Apparently they fight twice. Like, that to me is where this show gets, and it's only six episodes, that's where this entire series gets a little muddy for me. Is Palpatine, you may know more about this than I, but there's been talks about how you get a lot of backstory to Reva. And it's like, I don't fucking care. Like, I'm sure she's a fine villain, but you cannot bring her in, have the Inquisitors be the main villain, and then have Vader be also the main villain to me.
I know exactly. I just I want to clarify that, because I know exactly who posted that, and then they themselves clarified that, they said that they exaggerated greatly on that. Because the way they worded it made it seem like it was like this huge plot point, it's going to set up this show. They clarified, they're like, no, there's a, you'll know her backstory, but it's not going to take up half an episode or anything. It's there. Sure. Yeah, for that they clarified themselves after they posted that article because of how much rage there was on that. They're like, no, they said they messed up their wording or something.
Well, because the show is about Kenobi. You want it to be about Kenobi. And here's what I like about this is it's almost like Fallen Order and Rebels in a way, where you have these strong Inquisitors who are trying to take out these Jedi, and, you know, each who are the main villain Inquisitors in Rebels? You have the Grand Inquisitor.
And then you had the fifth brother, the seventh sister, and I think the ninth brother, who was in the finale of season two.
So there you go. You got the Inquisitors and you got the main Inquisitor. Vader and Palpatine were in there sparingly. And then in this series, you have Reva being the main Inquisitor that's going after Obi-Wan. It looks like the fifth brother is also kind of involved with it. And then there's also Vader, the Grand Inquisitor. So it's a little packed. And then in Jedi Fallen Order, what was it, like the fourth sister or something like that? Whatever her name was.
Second sister
and a Trilla, whatever she was. So you have these Inquisitors that are kind of like dying off. And I think Reva should die at the hand of Obi-Wan. I feel like that is a satisfying conclusion to some kind of confrontation with
them. I really hope her story is not a repeat of Trilla's from Fallen Order. I have a feeling it probably will be, but I can see them going in that direction where it's just like, oh, you know, she fell to the dark side. The thing about, I think her name is Moses Ingram. She has a very, this might be just a weird take, but her face doesn't seem very intimidating to me. She seems like she has a very like kind and friendly face. So I'm curious how well she can play an Inquisitor who's supposed to be violent. Like when I see Trilla from Fallen Order, like that's someone who I can see, oh, she's supposed to be evil. With her, I don't really get that vibe. That's not necessarily a bad thing. Maybe that was on purpose. So she's more empathetic in a way, if that's the story they're going to take. So I'm curious to see how they'll go.
I think it's because like Trilla, she has like, she's got that kind of gothic look going on, that real dark hair.
Yeah, is it the eyeliner that gets you?
Maybe it is. She's got like well done hair all around. You know, she's, you know.
So. Yeah, she doesn't look that intimidating. It's not like in a bad
way. Okay,
like,
I'll say her voice is really good though. When she was screaming out Kenobi, I'm like, okay, I'm on board with this. I can see this, but.
I agree with Goldman. I feel like if she smiles, it's going to be way too pretty to be like, oh, you're a villain. Like, no. It's not like they have bad casting in a lot of these shows anyways, but I'm concerned about having three Inquisitors and Darth Vader, and Ian McDiarmid has teased about Palpatine being in this. I'm still pretty confident that Qui-Gon Jinn will show up in some capacity. I heard about that like a year ago, about them being like, yeah, Liam and Samuel Jackson are both talking to Lucasfilm, and it seems day by day. I mean, I heard that like stop talking to Samuel, but
thank God.
It seems day by day. I don't know what's happening with that either, but I feel like day by day it feels more likely that Liam Neeson will show up as Qui-Gon in the series in some capacity, and I certainly hope he does, because that is what interests me in a Kenobi show. Kenobi reflecting on the Order, not Kenobi fighting 20 different villains, and it's all in the execution. I have a lot of faith in Deborah Chow. I don't know if I have faith in Joby Harold or Lucasfilm themselves.
I'll just say I'm just glad, and this is no hey, I'm not trying to be that guy here, but I'm just glad Favreau and Filoni aren't involved with this project. I know that sounds very rude. I'm not trying to be, but like,
but
I don't think they would
right
have done best.
That?
I don't think they would have been best with this project. We know Favreau's not involved.
I guarantee
Filoni
you, Filoni
has involvement, but
they're using the Grand Inquisitor, the fifth brother. Characters that Filoni created.
No, Filoni definitely had suggestions, but it's not like how his involvement
It's not small suggestions though, is it? Because he Filoni's the reason to bring back Vader. Isn't that what Deborah Chow said? That like he's the one who's like, hey, we should really bring back, you know, Vader in this. Like, wouldn't that be cool? You see them have a rematch, like
because he told her to go bigger and stuff, right?
So I feel like
It's different. It's different from him throwing out ideas compared to him being a showrunner, like or a writer,
that's
like he is
point
in Mandalorian. That's all I'm saying. Favreau's not in the picture on this at all, from what we've seen. He has no involvement in this. So I'm personally, especially after, which we'll get into later, the whole Book of Boba Fett thing, where they said some stuff that I'm like, okay, that's not how you write stories. I'm just excited for this. Like you said, Deborah Chow, I have faith in her, and I think the fact that those two aren't involved with this, it's going to give us a nice breath of fresh air for this story.
I hope you're right. I'm not as confident that Filoni or Favreau haven't had their hands in this egg basket, just because it seems.
We'll see.
It is weird. It's like I'm not really complaining that they're not, but I am that they are, and it's not like I dislike either of them. But what works with Star Wars is collaboration, different voices, different influences. Like you said, I want a different taste. You know, I want something new and exciting. I love Deborah Chow's directing and her style in season one. And even from seeing this right here, I mean, that shot alone of like Obi-Wan on this, whatever the fuck. And then like this overhead shot right here of him, like, just like, I don't see anything like this. This is shot like a Star Wars movie. And I'd argue even from the trailer alone, it's shot better than like Rise of Skywalker, maybe Solo.
No, bro.
I mean,
no, so, man.
You can't tell me Rise of Skywalker was shot well, all right? That thing is nothing but blue. All right, this looks.
That's color grading. Like that's completely different than shot wise.
It's all in the same filmmaking realm. I looking at this, this looks more like a Star Wars movie than I think Book of Boba Fett did for sure.
I'll agree with that. I'll agree with that.
Well, on a scale of 1 to 10, how hype are you guys for this series at this point?
9.5 easily.
You know what? This seems so unreasonable, but I think depending on if the show comes out on Friday or Wednesday, that could be like a 2 or 3 point difference for me in terms of on a scale of 1 to 10.
Bro. Yeah.
Because
I mean, like, I guess for a hype, yeah, I can see where you're coming from.
Because listen, it doesn't matter when the show comes out. I'm watching it the minute it comes out. I will be doing streams on it. I'll be making videos on it. If I have to know in the back of my mind. So just context for everyone watching. I have a typical 9 to 5 job. I work in my office on Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. And Fridays and Mondays are my work from home days. So if it comes out Friday morning, that means I can stay up all night, watch it, make a video, sleep in because it's a work from home day. And no one's going to really know if I'm not working at 9 in the morning, right? But if it's an office day, which would be Wednesday, that means I have to stream it, watch it. I go to sleep at maybe like 4 or 5 and then wake up at 7 for work because I have to go in the office, which would make me miserable. So that's why. But overall, I'm still very excited. If it comes out on Friday, it might be like a 9.5. If it comes out on Wednesdays, it'll probably be around like a 7.5.
What are you saying? What about you? What's your rating?
A 6.
What?
Yeah, I don't care.
You don't have I'm gonna sit down with you and tell you the entire plot and tell you what happens beat for beat so you can just calm down and just relax. Okay.
You will tell me that and it probably wouldn't even get me excited. I'd be like, oh, okay.
Maybe.
I've had the same opinion on this is what I felt about Rogue One going into it. You're not gonna surprise me. What do you, with Rogue One, I remember when they came out with that, I was like, everyone's like really excited. And I was the idiot in the background being like, what are they going to do? Like not get the plans. Like, I know how this ends. I know how the story goes. And same with this, like, what are you going to tell me? He's going to beat Vader and chop his arm off again. Like, come on. I don't want that. Like,
this is why we need Ryan Johnson back in Star Wars.
Get the fuck out. No, it's this is fan service and I'm completely okay with that. Absolutely. But that's all it is. But it could be good fan service. But my expectations for this aren't extremely high because I already know what to expect from this. I expect a lot of callbacks, a lot of member berries. I expect from Deborah Chow, a very good show, but I'm cautiously optimistic, even though my rating is only a 6. But I'm not enthusiastic about this, really, because it's Kenobi. And the reason I'm excited, the reason it's even at a 6 is because I get to see Ewan McGregor back, and I get to see him acting alongside Aunt Beru, Uncle Owen, you know, Bonnie Peace, Joel Edgerton. I mean, this scene right here is what I'm looking forward to. And I'm looking forward to like new things in Star Wars. And maybe come May 27th, I'm going to be blown away by the show and cannot wait for episode 3 to come out that next week. But at the moment, this looks fine.
It seems like this show is definitely, yes, there's fan service in this, but there's a lot more depth to this show, especially with the character of Obi-Wan Kenobi. And it's going to be the first time we really see Kenobi go through some sort of arc or have a lot of development on him. Which is all I asked for this show, because while yes, the fan service is fun, you have to have depth to back it. This is where Book of Boba Fett fails. This is just full of fan service. And unfortunately that fan service hurt previous stories and well, the story itself. I think you're going to like this one only. I genuinely do. Like, I'm not trying to be biased, right? Like, because I was in the same boat as you for months. I was like, I'm excited for the show, but what are they going to do? It's fan service. But there's going to be a lot more going on between Vader and Kenobi. There's not going to be a million Clone Wars flashbacks. I think there's at most going to be one, maybe two, but they are also integral to the story and what's going on. So here's what I'll tell you. Ahsoka is not in this show.
Oh, thank God. Thank God.
Anyone know how I know Filoni's not involved?
Can you tell me if Grogu's in the show?
No.
Thank God. Okay. I can sleep all the night.
I don't like look, he very well could be. Because like plot leaks are plot leaks. Things could be changed. Like things mm-hmm. could be different and they don't know everything. But every single plot leak that most of them are public, by the way, and then there's a lot of ones I'm just talking to my guy on. They've all lined up with the trailers for like months. Just months okay. out. So,
I have one question before we move on that is slightly leakish or spoilerish. Is there another Jedi outside of the two that we have seen.
I don't want to hear this.
I'm not going to say.
Yeah, you guys can say.
No, I'm not going to say because of the chat. Because of the chat.
Oh, okay. That's a good point.
It depends on how you look. I even present the question.
Okay.
I'm
okay,
not saying
okay.
That's
yeah, yeah, yeah. No comment. Moving on. No comment.
All
right.
I'm going to laugh my ass off of like all this crap is fake and the show sucks. I'm like.
I heard a little bit and I heard it like it depends and I'm nervous.
Yeah, me too.
No, it depends on how he presents the question.
I'm gonna fucking cry if Obi-Wan's like in a back alley on Coruscant, and then he just looks over and he sees like the Mortis symbols, and it's like a world between worlds, and he walks, and Yoda's like, come here, my young man.
I don't think that's happening.
That I wouldn't mind. I wouldn't mind seeing like Yoda and like some sort of like force. Like, remember how Yoda talked to Ezra in Rebels that one time?
The Cairo. Cairo, don't start with me, man. Come on, I've had a good day so far. Don't ruin it.
So yeah,
the CG deepfake Han, dude.
Like, there's very few things I think I can think of that would be more damaging to my mental health than seeing Mace Windu show up in anything after Revenge of the Sith. Like in terms of Star Wars, oh my god. Like I'm actively struggling of thinking of something that could be worse. To me,
yeah, I mean, it was a bad idea during Revenge of the Sith. Oh man, all right, well, we can move to our most interesting of the topics.
Oh boy,
Book of Boba Fett, the Disney Gallery episode came out. I don't have like any footage of it to really show. I'm pretty confident some of that shit can get copyrighted at times because knowing my luck, but anywho, the Book of Boba Fett Disney Gallery episode came out. Me and Goldman watched it, you know, Papa Memes kind of knows the synopsis of it. Goldman, you watched it. We don't have to get into the nitty gritty about like the CGI or Luke returning, like Mark Hamill doing all that. But I think what's most interesting about this, at least going in, is this was all filmed before the show was even released. So they don't even understand our reactions at this point when they're making these things. From the documentary that we saw from the Disney Gallery episode, in terms of story and decision making, what did you take away from this? Like what was your feeling leaving this? Because to open it up, my feeling was a little bit of frustration, truthfully. I was a little frustrated with some of the comments by Dave Filoni and John. It was the first time I was like, you're wrong. Like, you're just wrong. In a good wrong way. But what did you feel? What did you think about the decision-making that went in to the Book of Boba Fett series after watching this Disney Gallery episode?
Probably just disappointment. Because it's if you like the Book of Boba Fett, you will like this documentary. It does some interesting things about, you know, how they created certain creatures, the effects of stuff. In that regards, it's fine. I won't say it's a bad documentary. It's just it frustrated me because what I wanted to hear was reasons why they made certain decisions. You know, why did they devote two episodes to Mando? Why did they remove Boba Fett from two episodes? Why did they feel it was so important to reunite Grogu and Mando in this series? And the answers we got were, we missed Mando. We wanted him to be in the series.
I've got the quote.
Okay. And there was, I think what disappointed me most was the approach to this series. Because a lot of the things they say, they talk a little bit about story here and there. But a lot of the things that Rodriguez, Favreau, and even Filoni say, they're just like, oh, this would be so cool. Like when they talk about the final episode, which I hated, it's like, oh, this would be so cool to have a Rancor here. It'd be so cool to have Cad Bane. It'd be so cool to have Boba Fett and Din Djarin, you know, have their jetpacks. It would be so cool to see Grogu force mind sleep a giant Rancor. I'm just like, it's cool, I guess. But at the expense of a crucial and fundamental, excellently told story, which was The Mandalorian Season 2. Oh, and then when they said, people have been wondering what Luke and Grogu are up to. Yeah, I'm wondering what they're up to as well. I don't want to find out in this series. It's like, I'm curious to see what Kira and Han are up to after the Solo movie. I don't want to find out what happens to them in the Obi-Wan series. It's like,
Could you imagine if like two of the episodes are...
It's like, it's just, there's very little... They give no valid reason as to why the Book of Boba Fett devoted two episodes to something that doesn't have to do with Boba Fett, other than they miss Mando. And it told me, when they're like, oh, we miss Mando, we want to tell a story with him. I really think it's them saying, we don't have entire faith that Boba Fett can carry an entire series.
They didn't. I mean, there was even a part about them, at the beginning, they talked about him almost immediately being accepted into the tribe and how like that would have worked as a story. Maybe like that would have been done in like literally the first episode. Like he just talks to the, I think they said like he just talks to the chief and they work things out instead of spending what, two or three episodes of him being mm-hmm. accepted by them. And or is it that first episode that he's accepted at the very end?
But second, first kind of second, he gets like initiated.
Exactly. And so that frustrated me because I was like, you spent half the series building up this Tusken thing. And you're telling me now that like that could have been, we all knew it watching it, it could have been summarized in one episode. And it's like all the interesting things about Boba Fett, they intentionally went away from. John even talks about, and this is what really irked me, is he says, you know, people want to have this kind of morally gray character, this anti-hero, where, you know, Boba is a cold-blooded bounty hunter who is, you know, like Cad Bane says, he's done some shitty fucking things. There's all these like speculations that he is the one who like burned Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru to a crisp. I mean, that is yeah. dark stuff. And I don't think that actually happened, but if it did, I mean, come on, like Boba Fett is not a good guy up until the point we see him in Return of the Jedi, and that's fine. And so it's weird to me that Jon Favreau is like, well, that's not interesting because there's only so much you can do. You know, as a character matures, he becomes more sympathetic and empathetic. I get that. I that's absolutely right. You know, George Lucas has had this situation as a filmmaker himself. But with that said, the entire reason we wanted a Book of Boba Fett series or just Boba Fett in general is not based me. Off of, I know you didn't, but most people wanted him to be the anti-hero. I'm not saying that's exactly why I would have watched the show. I would have just liked to seen what he is doing in the crime world. The entire crime world stuff is what made the show so interesting, of doing the mafia style Star Wars. They even talked about The Godfather, and I'm like, oh, I'm glad he talked about it. You didn't do shit with it. You were like, oh, I'm gonna sit the crime families down, and you know, the crime families have an alliance where we're not gonna shoot each other, and then they're not mentioned for five fucking episodes, and then guess what, they betray me, and then we kill them at the end. Like, you're not tying up loose ends, you're just offhandedly remarking things.
You know what really made me laugh? So they talk about Boba Fett's appearance in Mando Season 2, you know, the one episode which Rodriguez directed. And I like that episode. I think they did Boba Fett very well. Because Boba Fett in that episode, episode 6 of Mando Season 2, he feels ruthless. That feels like a Boba Fett to me. Maybe one with a little more honor, which is fine, but it feels like Boba Fett. And then they're talking about the fight scene at the end of the first episode, you know, when they have like the fighting against the people with the red shields. And he's like, we wanted to replicate the badassery that we saw in his appearance in Mando Season 2. I'm like, what? Kick,
dude?
He looked like an utter... He looked like a bitch in that episode. What are you talking about? Around,
he literally shot a missile at a shield that was less than 3 feet away from him, and you're telling me, well, you know, we're really trying to bring out that badass. And he's a fucking idiot is what he is. I mean, come on.
I just find it so funny that it's like, they talk about him being sympathetic and stuff, and it's like, whatever. But then if you look... Literally within the same time frame, him and Mando Season 2, he's got a sniper rifle pointed at a child, a literal baby, yes. threatening yes. him, saying, give me what I want or I will shoot this thing's head off. I don't care. It's so inconsistent. It does not work.
You know what was another thing that really said a lot to me? It's like when they were talking about Mando, it's like right when they started talking about Mando, they said something along the lines of, this is the third season of our storytelling. I was like, no, it's the first season of the Book of Boba Fett. It should not be treated as the third season of the Mandoverse. And that's kind of how they excused devoting two episodes to Mando and Grogu. It's like if you take the stuff in this documentary about Mando and when they talk about Luke and Grogu and Ahsoka, if you were to just take that and pretend that it's a Mandalorian season 3 documentary, awesome stuff. But it's just like, you just can't get it out of your head that this is not the right place for it. And it frustrates me so much when people are like, oh, it doesn't matter. I'm like, it does. This is the Book of Boba Fett. It's like, it's the same reason why people would get frustrated if Reva had a whole episode devoted to herself and Obi-Wan. It's just, we happen to like Mando and Grogu, so we're okay with them getting two episodes devoted to themselves. It's like, no. If I'm watching an Obi-Wan series, I want it to be about Obi-Wan. If I'm watching the Book of Boba Fett series, which I never wanted, I want it to be about Boba Fett. And they weren't interested. They weren't interested. It's like that they approached this show. They're like, there's so many cool things we can do. You know, we can have this cool monster. You know, we can have Boba Fett riding a Rancor. You know what? I feel like the show was... I feel like their main focus is clearly The Mandalorian, because both those seasons are fantastic. And then they're like, you know what would be cool? If we just did a show about Boba Fett, we just did a season. like, I have this idea, you know, of like Boba Fett riding a Rancor. You know, what if Boba Fett fought on a train? Okay, this sounds like cool. Let's have all these cool ideas. Let's see if we can make a story that interweaves. Oh, wait, let's devote like 10 seconds. You know, they talk about a whole thing where they're like, you know, Boba Fett goes through this traumatic experience going through the Sarlacc pit. And it's going to change him just like how it would change anyone. Yes, that's true. But the show just doesn't really convey that. The show doesn't convey that Boba Fett has any trauma of being in the Sarlacc pit whatsoever. So it's just like
he never talks about it or looks back at it in any way, right? Like, he doesn't reflect on like, oh, that was really rough for me. He just climbs out and moves on.
Yeah, and then so it's just...
Sorry. We get it. We understand.
Whenever Golden pauses and looks down, you know he's really contemplating his next word.
I'm gathering my thoughts. I want to be a little bit more coherent. So it's just, this show, it seems like to me, they didn't go into this show wanting to tell the best story possible. They wanted to go into this show, you know, show some cool things with Boba Fett, which they did at times. And then they're like, oh, wait, we're going to have to go 2 years without giving the fans anything with Mando and Grogu. Let's just throw in some story there so people don't feel like this is a complete waste. So this show has more importance than it actually does. And it is. This show is technically very important to the story of the Mandoverse, which is not unfortunate. It's just the reason why it's important is unfortunate.
I don't like the excuse of bringing in Mando and then, like you said, giving him two whole episodes, literally pushing Boba Fett to the side. It seems like John and Dave did not know the audience they were making this for or understanding what we actually wanted from this series. Because they talk about Dave was talking about the final episode being like so grand and he's like, it's like a movie. I mean, you got so many things coming in at once and it's all being, I'm like, that didn't make it good. So Dave. Dense. Yeah. It's so dense. Every single frame has so many things going on. It's like they literally pulled the classic George Lucas.
I may have gone too far in a few places.
At least George can admit it.
Exactly. George admitted it. And you could see, it's like you could see the gears in his head turning of like, oh shit, I put way too much on the screen. Yeah. They didn't think that 1 second. They weren't like, oh yeah, let's have the Rancor in the finale. Let's also have all the mods show up and we're going to have some weird resolution with the Tuskens because it looks like Cad Bane actually killed them and not the gang that he already killed and completely slaughtered. Let's wrap it up with Fennec Shand literally leaving Boba to go just kill people in a room. She hangs the mayor. And I mean, the everything that was interesting about the series was completely written off within the first two or three episodes. And I it's so weird looking at this because I even think about like watching it again. And I just think about when Boba walks up and there's the mods, there's Black Chrysanthemum, and there's Fennec, and he tosses someone like an apple or something. And it's like that. It's like a 2000s ending to a high school movie. We're like, well, you know, I guess the
pop song's playing book in the background.
The real book was the friends we made along the way.
Book of like, Bubba's friends.
That's like when they talked about Chrysanthemum, like they talked about how cool would it be to have a Wookiee, but we have to make sure he looks different than Chewbacca. You know, they not once did they actually mention Chrysanthemum's origins in the comics. And I think they might have showed a picture of him in the comics. They talk more when talking about Chrysanthemum. They talk more about the EU, which Chrysanthemum's not a part of, and they do his actual origins. It's like, yes. That doesn't really bother me. We're just like, yeah. And I'm so tired.
I like this question about like, ask yourself, if the Book of Boba Fett didn't have the Star Wars brand name, would it have survived actual criticism? No. I don't think so. I think it would be a failure as a series without the Star Wars brand, without it being about Boba Fett, or even this of like, going 2 years without seeing Grogu and Din, I think would have been the best thing possible for them.
Awesome. You know what? We went 2 years. We went 2 years between Force Awakens and Last Jedi. And that was like the best time to be a Star Wars fan in terms of speculation and all that.
You got to give us time to marinate.
There's just, like I said, I haven't seen the documentary yet. I don't know if I will. Documentaries typically on average, especially for Star Wars, make me like the film more. Even The Phantom Menace, because it's like it shows what they went through and stuff. Rise of Skywalker documentary, as fake as it was still really, really cool to see how much work the production crew and they all went into making this film in such a short period of time. It's nice. It makes me appreciate the film more.
Like you trained his father.
What?
Did you watch the trailer?
Yeah, dude, we're live.
He's got to give his opinions about the trailer at bare minimum. Ask him what he thought about Book of Boba.
What do you think of Book of Bob?
It's worse than Morbius.
You said it's worse than Morbius. God. Damn, that's tough. I'm
surprised he's even seen Morbius.
I don't think he has, but...
Oh, huh. Probably still enough. Right.
There's one quote that is, for me, what I've seen consistently from Mr. Dave Filoni, who I know gets praised a lot, is looked up as the god of Star Wars. I don't agree with that whatsoever. It's this quote right here. We felt that it would be difficult for us to go a whole season without seeing him.
As in Mando.
The Mandalorian.
No,
it's quite simple, Dave. Bring him in.
I want to clarify a point. I do not mind Din Djarin / Mando being in the series. I do not. What I mind is that they tell crucial parts of his story in this series. Like, I always get baffled when we realize we finally got the answer of what happened in the Night of 1,000 Tears, an event that is crucial to the Mandalorian in the Book of Boba Fett.
Yeah, and I'll agree with you there. I think we all knew that Din Djarin would show up in this show to help Boba, not to get his story shown more. That's so dumb. That doesn't make any sense. What are people going to do now when they skipped over Book of Boba Fett because they just simply watched The Mandalorian? Now they watch The Mandalorian Season 3, and Grogu is now back with Din, and this entire arc with the Darksaber and stuff is just completely passed over, and they're more than likely going to continue that with Mandalorian Season 3 when he goes to Mandalore. It's just so stupid. There's no excuse for it. I know people are like, but it's Season 2.5. I'm like, does that mean it's good writing?
No,
you can't do that. I don't know. That quote alone is just, that just shows, that's like the worst. I like Filoni, but that's like the worst, the bad side of Filoni coming out, where it's like, it's so much just fan over actual writing. It's just his fan brain just going off like, we should do this, we should add this character. No, always bring up so much like your father. It's like, yeah, we saw Luke and Ahsoka for the first time in live action together, and it wasn't them meeting for the first time and talking about Anakin.
I think one of the funniest things for me was seeing them reason why they bring in Robert Rodriguez for like the series director. They're just like, we just loved his work in
want to hear something funny? For one, I actually do like his work in Season 2. But anyway, so they were talking about the finale, and they said Jon Favreau was going to direct it. But Robert Rodriguez was like, man, I saw the script for this. I was like, I really want to direct this. So I went to Jon Favreau's office and I was like, can I please direct this? And Jon Favreau was like, you know what? Fine, you can direct it.
I just think of the spin. The Spy Kids spin, dude. Oh, Robert. I like it. Cool guy, but I don't think he fits with Star Wars. I know that sounds very elitist, but I don't know.
I don't mind him directing an episode, like a season.
Even the Boba Fett episode of Mando Season 2, I don't think was shot well at all. I mean, people told me, like, if you got told this was a fan film, you would believe it for the most part.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weirdly shot. There's none of it feels real with his, but I digress. We can.
I love when they talk about the mods, and they're like, they're like, Mando is so anti-droid, and now this next generation of kids in the Star Wars universe, they're adding appendages to their bodies. So it's like the evolution of like the generation and culture of Star Wars. I'm like, there's never really been like advancements in like culture or technology in Star Wars. If you watch KOTOR, it's for the most part, play KOTOR. It's like a lot of the same technologies, and that's like 1,000 years before, probably maybe more.
Yeah, 4,000.
Yeah, so it's like, it's not something you really think of. It's an interesting idea. They don't really touch on the mods more than just saying, oh, it's cool that they have like droid parts on their bodies. I'm like,
I just took it as them being teenagers who are like into weird shit, and they're like, yeah, we're gonna alter our bodies. Not like, oh, there's a new culture and like this, like it's more accepted nowadays to be like modded or something like that. I was like, I never crossed. I mean, Malik literally had a fucking fake jaw on the front of his face. I don't think that was because of a culture thing. I'm pretty sure it was just a necessity so he could breathe. Same with Vader. I mean, Vader's not adapting into a new culture. He just needs to survive. So it's. So many weird decisions.
Almost every decision that they make, it's like, oh, this would be so cool. It's like, Mando needs a new ship. Oh, we love the N1 Starfighter. Wouldn't that be so cool to bring it back? See, it's not a problem if they do it a few times. Like, they wanted to say, let's bring an N1 Starfighter back because it's cool. That's all right. I'm fine with that. Just when they do it with almost every decision in the show, let's bring Cad Bane back. Why? Because it's cool. They don't even bother exploring the history between these two other than, like, two lines. Let's bring Rancor in because it's so cool.
Well, before we move on to our next topic, I do want to ask one last thing about Book of Boba Fett. What's weird is that we don't like that they brought in Mando, but the best episodes were Mando.
Well, that's what I was actually going to talk about.
What's so weird?
That's the story they actually care about. They actually care about telling the story of the Mandalorian.
I don't even need to talk after that. That's a very good point.
I think we all agree on that. Not only was it shot beautifully, I mean, Bryce is a good director. I can see that. But Mandalorian is a new character, brand new, clean slate. They just continued a story. That's why. It could have been the first episode of Mando season 3. That's why.
Mm-hmm. And you know what?
This is also a great comic.
Book of Boba Fett.
Yes.
Seems like it was created.
Honestly.
A group of people were playing with action figures, hence, this is cool. Well, I mean, it's just like the Boba Fett episode in Mando season 2, which is kind of ironic. It's like, that's kind of how Robert decided to shoot it, is him and his son went out with action figures and they created shots, and oh, this would be cool if he did this with his flamethrower and stuff, you know?
Just wait till you see what he sent in for that beast in episode 1.
I'm not going to watch the documentary. You guys have lost. I had a 10% chance of watching it, but now you guys have lost.
I actually didn't mind that. Like, those things are fine.
It was funny.
I just want to end on two more thoughts. I think what's going to solidify the show as it being, I don't want to say a failure, but a big disappointment, is besides maybe certain characters showing up, I guarantee you nothing that happened in the series is going to be important in the Mandoverse going forward. Like, we might see Krasantan show up. We might see the mods show up. Like, I guarantee you Boba Fett's, like, saving of Tatooine is not going to be relevant ever. And honestly might not ever be mentioned again, other than maybe a throwaway line.
Well, Goldman, you don't understand. He didn't save Tatooine. That's going to happen in seasons 2, 3, and 5. We're skipping 4. And he literally only saves Mos Espa. I rule Mos Espa.
And then I protect these towns. Then you know what's my... I love the irony of this. I have a feeling when Favreau first approached Kathleen Kennedy, he said, I want to do a Boba Fett show, which was The Mandalorian. And then they're like, no, let's do something else. So it's like, okay. So we created this character called The Mandalorian, Din Djarin. He is entirely based off of Boba Fett. He looks like Boba Fett. He's a bounty hunter like Boba Fett. In the beginning, he kind of acts like Boba Fett, but he's a little nicer. I love how a new character Disney created. They needed a character that is based off of Boba Fett to be in the show about Boba Fett to keep the show interesting. Isn't that ironic, funny?
At its most, yeah.
It's like if someone made a Star Wars documentary about George Lucas and they needed Rian Johnson to talk half the time. It's just like, no, just George Lucas created Star Wars. Like, that would just be hilarious to me. That the character that is based off of Boba Fett was needed in the show about Boba Fett to keep the show interesting. That just says a lot.
Well, I know what I'm going to do for my next documentary now. Interview Rian Johnson and just have him talk about George Lucas for 3 hours.
That'd be amazing.
Our next topic, though, is due to May 4th and just the special aspect of this day. There's a lot of years in Star Wars history. And I think recent memory, mainly these past 20-odd years, you got, you know, 1997, 1999, with both of them having the release of the special editions and also the Phantom Menace donning the new wave of Star Wars. 2005 was interesting. We got Battlefront 2. We got Revenge of the Sith, probably a myriad of other games. Then you go on to other years. I mean, when The Force Unleashed came out, that was big because Clone Wars is coming out around the same time. I mean, there's a lot of very cool years to look back in Star Wars history. In my video today talking about it, I said 2015 and 2016, I think, are probably the ones I'm most nostalgic and, you know, looking favorable on. But for you guys, looking back, I know it's kind of hard to quantify what makes it the best year. Could it be the content? Could it be the fan reaction? Could it be the enthusiasm? It could just be how you felt in that moment in time. But when you guys look back in the past, I mean, we're all not that old, over 20, but in general, over the past 20 years, even from childhood, what do you look back and think is the best year in Star Wars history, and what made it that best year?
I mean, I've got my answer if you're still thinking.
Hit me.
You go.
All right. 2019, easily. I would say 2005, but I think 2019 surpasses it just because I'm older. We got Battlefront 2 was at its peak. My Battlefront YouTube channel was at its peak, so that was great. It was thriving. Then we got Rise of Skywalker, which is a film I personally love, and then we also got Galaxy's Edge and Fallen Order. So, like, you get these big things that for me were super personal, and I can't name another year that has one, that much grand content, and two, that much content that I personally really, really loved. So easily 2019. My second choice would be 2005, just because Revenge of the Sith, Revenge of the Sith game, Battlefront 2. I mean, there's a few other games I played during that that year. But I was also young, and it was hard to appreciate it as much as I can like now growing up. Plus, those things don't even compare to how big the things were in 2019. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think, I guess we're only going within the past certain amount of years. Because, I mean, you could argue like 1977, but I wouldn't argue that. Yeah,
but I mean, is that really the best year for Star Wars?
I would say it's a tie between 2005 and 2015, and for two totally different reasons. I think 2005 obviously had the release of Revenge of the Sith, but it really solidified like that generation of prequel fans with just so much prequel stuff. You know, we talk about all the games, a lot of books, a lot of comics too. I think George Lucas, that's when like he announced, he said, I'm going to do a Clone Wars series. So 2005 kind of solidified the prequel fandom in that generation, which we see today so passionately love Star Wars, or at least the prequels and the original six films. And then the other one I'd argue is 2015, because that really rejuvenized Star Wars. I wouldn't say Star Wars was dead beforehand, but it wasn't as popular as it once was, obviously. You know, there's a bunch of people that would say, oh, I wish Disney never bought Star Wars. You know, they ruined Star Wars with the sequels, which is fine. But I guarantee you, everyone who hates the sequels passionately, they feel a stronger love for the prequels and the originals because they hate the sequels so much. So in a way, Disney buying Star Wars made them love Star Wars even more. Just their Star Wars, not the new Star Wars. So, so 2015 kind of just like, you know, brought back Star Wars. So that's how I see it.
Man, I don't...
It's tough. It's close.
You bringing up 2015, 2019, I mean, even 2005, it's all very cool to look back on. I want to lean towards 2019 just because of the Fallen Order coming out, the Mandalorian coming out. That, to me, I mean, Mandalorian's best Star Wars we've had since 1983 with Return of the Jedi.
How did I forget that? Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, changed so many things. And even Star Wars Celebration, like what they announced that year, and just kind of like, it seemed like Star Wars was not coming back, but it was like, oh, we have a little bit more to hope for than we really thought. You know, and then the movie came out and sucked. And
it was amazing. You know, it's really tough. I think we can argue that they were, what, four out of five on their content that year, their major content. I mean, people were happy with Battlefront 2, Fallen Order.
Didn't Star Wars Resistance come out that year?
No one watched Resistance.
That's a kid's show. Exactly. That's made for three-year-olds.
It came out in 2018, technically. Okay. So
they're six on their con. You can't consider that grand. And then Galaxy's Edge was very successful as well. So yeah. I don't know, man.
Akira has a good point of like the impactful films, the stories in the games, 05. And that's kind of how I feel of like looking back. I like what Goldman was saying about how like, it really solidified the prequels for a lot of people our age, but I don't like the notion of like the sequels have kind of like made people love like their Star Wars, because I think you're right, but I think that's just the wrong way to do Star Wars. Like I hate that aspect because it's like, oh, these movies came out and did they unify the fandom? No, if anything, they split an already divided fandom from two sections, which was prequels. And I don't like the prequels because there's not a section who's like, I don't like the originals, but it went from, you either like the prequels or you don't, to you either like the prequels and you like the sequels and then you like the original. Like there's like three or four sections of the fandom now. And a lot of it, I think, really happened with The Last Jedi. And that's why I think, personally, I'd probably say 2016 was the best year, because it was right after The Force Awakens. The amount of interest that was in Star Wars was insurmountable. Let me tell you, dude, when I was running Instagram on as Star Wars only back in 2016, 2015, there was not a week that I did not have multiple people hitting me up to try to advertise Star Wars products. The amount of engagement that we had, I knew myself, but so many Instagram accounts at the time were getting thousands of followers a week. There's not a single Instagram account on Star Wars base that gets that amount of followers anymore, because the interest just kind of slowly dwindled after 2017, unfortunately. But in 2016, with Rogue One coming out, coming off the heels of The Force Awakens, the conspiracies that we had and the theories that we had for Episode 8 were massive. I mean, just the excitement. Do you guys remember that Chewbacca lady with the mask, where she like she became like a viral sensation. I mentioned in my video, like Jimmy Kimmel at the end of one of his episodes, or maybe it was Jimmy Fallon, but they had the entire Force Awakens cast like sing and hum Star Wars. You don't get that stuff anymore. And it really felt like not just we, the Star Wars fandom, I felt like the whole world was talking about Star Wars again. And it only feels like that between 2014 and 2016 at the moment. And after 2017, I mean, I think we've talked about this before, whether you like The Last Jedi or not, it changed everything. And the backlash, and that's I'm not going to say that's almost like proof of like how it killed Star Wars, but it completely derailed any excitement people had for anything after 2017. And we've all said on the channel before too that 2018 is probably like the worst year for Star Wars in recent memory.
Yeah,
and it's just sad to look at it like that. To me, it is really sad to see like 2014 excitement, 2015 massive hype. I mean, like hype that was not Avengers Endgame, maybe a little bit more, a little bit similar to Avengers Endgame. I think that one probably beat it, beat Force Awakens in terms of excitement. But even almost as hyped as The Phantom Menace. I mean, the excitement people had for Star Wars coming back in 2015 and 2014 carried over in the 2016, which is hard to do. And then carried over from 2016 because people loved Rogue One into the next year. I mean, Battlefront 1 sucked, but we still enjoyed it for the most part. And so it just seemed like Star Wars had a lot riding on it. 2017, everything changes. So I think at the end of the day, I'll have to pick 2016 just because of the interest that the culture had in Star Wars and how fun both movies, The Force Awakens and Rogue One, were. I mean, they were very well received when they dropped.
Keep in mind, though, like Last Jedi came out at the end of 2017. So 2017 overall was still a pretty good year. Like, there was a lot of excitement still.
Because we had excitement, but then you had the debacle for Battlefront 2. And then you had The Last Jedi falling, because if we're going off of, like...
I remember Mark Hamill talked about TLJ way before it came out, and that's when
started. If there's major excitement for 11 and a half months of a year, and then extreme disappointment for half a month of the year, I'd say the year was overall still pretty good.
I think if it had such a bad ripple effect for 2018, that 2018 was literally the worst year I could think of in the past 10 years of Star Wars, I mean, even worse than, like, maybe 2021... which was kind of shitty, I think. Because, I mean, if we go based off of it being at the end of the year, I mean, I could say the same thing for, like, 2016, where it was like, well, 2016 was fun, but what made it really good was Rogue One at the end, which, yeah, carried over into 2017. Wow. But for me, it's, like, in terms of content and what we were looking forward to, and I think, like, being excited for it, but also delivering on it at the end.
I really think the backlash, I would still say 2017 is a good year. Like, the effects of the backlash of The Last Jedi didn't really hit until the last few days of 2017 and then 2018. So I guess that's how I see it. I don't see the effects. I look at more of the year about just like how the whole year was as a whole, as opposed to the specific content. Like, the content of The Last Jedi, even though I love it, the backlash was mostly affected in 2018 on. That's how I see it.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. Like what Kairo says, most of the big Star Wars platforms now were built off of 2014 to 2016. It really felt like that. It really felt like there was just a wave of interest at that time that we're just moving on.
Snopes.
He says that you forgot that Carrie passed away in 2016. Colin was fired in 2017. Oh my God, I forgot about both of those happened in like a very short time frame.
Yeah.
The firing.
A few months. Yeah.
But there's a lot of when Colin Trevorrow was fired, there wasn't that like. People weren't upset. They're like, "Oh, Book of
No," Avengers because we hadn't seen Episode 8 yet. We were still like, "Yeah, whatever."
And then Lord, it's hard to be upset. Back then, you know, it wasn't a consistent thing, so we didn't realize it would be that bad. But like when Lord and Miller were fired, there wasn't like universal upset. It's like once Solo came out, people were like, "Okay, yeah, we probably wish Lord and Miller did this."
There was definitely universal concern, though. I mean, I remember.
Yeah, but it wasn't like that. It wasn't that bad.
The Last Jedi, like in theaters, and being like, maybe I'll get a trailer for this. I mean, this movie comes out in 6 months. Not a fucking peep. Not a peep until like 2 months. I mean, people. What?
There was concern for Solo, but the excitement for The Last Jedi just, in my memory, outweighed everything so much.
No, you're right. I mean, the excitement for The Last Jedi. I mean, even after the trailer came out in May at Celebration. Was huge. And I mean, like I've said before, I was the only idiot in the crowd who was like, what the fuck is that? No, I don't want this. But everyone was excited. That's what I dislike about some people who dislike the sequels is the revisionist history of saying like, oh, no one was excited for The Last Jedi after that. I'm like, you're a fucking liar. You're going to tell me I misremember Star Wars Celebration and running like the social media accounts that I've ran through Star Wars and seeing people being excited for episode 7, you're going to tell me no one was, or my bad, episode 8. Like, you're going to tell me no one was excited for it. Everyone was excited for episode 8.
Ray's parents and Snoke theories carried like 2016 and 2017.
So did Luke too. Like, just the thought of Luke coming back. Yeah, like there's so many things that was riding on it, and then Rian Johnson was like, "That's so cool. I'm gonna shit on all of it." And I just love it. I mean, yeah, I mean, it was great. It was great at just derailing any excitement Star Wars had going forward. And I know he's happy. Like, imagine being the guy. Like, even if you like liking The Last Jedi, but just like him being like, "I made such a great story, and I delivered on what I said about like half the people loving it and half the people." He's like, I literally turned off so many people from Star Wars because of my complex story. No one was excited for TLJ. Just like no one hated the prequels. Yeah, that's a great point. I hate that stuff nowadays. What movie was worse for the fandom? Phantom Menace or The Last Jedi?
It's tough. It's close.
Last Jedi.
It's very close.
Don't get me wrong. It's tough. I don't know, because I feel like people were instantly mad at Last Jedi after it came out, or as Phantom Menace. It took people a little bit of time to really be like, oh, that wasn't that good. But they still had, that was still the first movie of the trilogy, so it didn't derail anything, whereas many people think that Last Jedi just completely derailed what Force Awakens set up. So for Phantom Menace, they're like, this is the first one, Attack of the Clones is going to be better because he's going to learn from the mistakes.
God, so, that'd be a really interesting debate.
That would be.
Yeah, can we do that like on next week's show or something like that? Like, which was worse for the fandom? Because I'd have to really look back on this, but I'm going to lean towards The Last Jedi just because of, like I said social earlier, the social media effect of like the amount of excitement everyone had for anything, and the negative reaction that people had in 2016. And I mean, I'm partly to blame. The negative videos that people made, that had a ripple effect that I think people are still feeling now. Like, the Phantom Menace was literally born because of The Last Jedi. I do not think if The Last Jedi happened and was received as bad as it was, the Phantom Menace would even be like a dot on the map at this point.
No.
So weird.
It's the biggest argument, Mike, I lean Last Jedi, but I think the biggest argument in favor of the Phantom Menace is that when people look at the two most hyped movies of all time, it's The Force Awakens and The Phantom Menace. So it's like people waited for 16 years to get The Phantom Menace, and when they got it, so many people hated it. With the sequels, they waited 10 years to get The Force Awakens, and most people loved it, and then The Last Jedi came out and ruined all excitement.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you understand the point I'm trying to say? It's like there was a lot more excitement for The Phantom Menace than The Last Jedi, so the disappointment was probably bigger. We'd have to ask longer, to be honest, because we don't really remember what it was like in 1999, so...
No, I mean, I know the reactions to it, but I don't remember. I mean, I remember the hype. I don't remember the hype, but I mean, I know about the hype for it and everything. There's nothing that will match that. I mean, you said two. I'm going to put in a third movie, most hyped of all time, Avatar 2, coming out this December. Pretty hyped.
I'm that hyped.
Is it?
I'm joking with you. Who the fuck cares about Avatar 2?
I was like, bro, what are you talking about?
I'm looking forward to it, but like...
I mean, sure, it'll be a cool visual experience.
It's like the only movies in history that could compare to the excitement for Phantom Menace and Force Awakens. It might be like Endgame. And maybe, no, not even No Way Home. Like,
yeah, No Way Home was a different kind of hype.
It's like up there, but like not in the same conversation as Force Awakens and Phantom Menace.
That was like, we're tired of all sitting at home doing COVID. Can we all go out and see a movie together?
We're getting like 50 Marvel movies a year and stuff. And like, here's just another one. But this one could be exciting because our nostalgic characters are coming back.
Like, is there any other movie out there like that you can think of that's really like in that conversation as in terms of just being really hyped?
Billion dollars. Like maybe Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King, because that was the third one.
The Dark Knight Rises was very hyped.
Oh, The Dark Knight Rises was a very good one. Yeah.
That's one I can think of.
Modern Warfare 3, but that's a video game.
What the fuck?
Oh, gosh,
Yeah, that was pretty big, too. I mean, video game releases used to be a huge deal.
Yeah.
Rogue One, we're talking about most hyped of all time. Sorry, Rogue One would even be in the stratosphere.
Jurassic World.
Yeah. I don't think so. I don't think it was. Like, we're talking
Fast and Furious 9.
No, God. Oh, man. Always Special probably was really hyped.
I don't know, because like if you think a lot of like the most famous movies ever, a lot of them have gotten sequels and like have been really bad. Like there's been like Independence Day, and like no one cared for the sequel.
It's because the story wrapped up like that, you know.
Yeah, Well, I mean, you could argue the story wrapped up with the originals and the prequels. I guess Star Wars is just different.
Well, because because Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back is like one of the greatest.
How about Harry Potter? So. Was like
a good point. So I looked it up on IMDb. They have a list of the top 10 most anticipated movies of all time. I already disagree with literally the entire list. Actually, I think this is factually wrong. But number one, they have Avengers Endgame. Number two, they have Avengers Infinity War.
No.
Number three, and I do think this was extremely hyped because I do remember this as well, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2. I mean, that had a lot of hype for it. The Dark Knight Rises, that is a very big one. I don't think it's bigger than a lot of the other ones on this list. Captain America Civil War, I remember a lot of interest in that because it was like the Civil War aspect. But, I mean, it only did $400 million in the box office. You can't tell me that it's like the most hyped, one of the most hyped if it's doing that.
Captain America made like $1.2 billion. What are you talking about?
Not Civil War. I mean, yes. Looking at IMDb, it says gross $408 million.
Oh, that's after. That's not box office. That's after all the funding.
Well, sorry. I guess I'll go fuck myself.
yeah, come on.
Lord of the Rings, Return of the King is number six.
Sure.
See, this is where I disagree. Like, number seven is The Force Awakens. I think The Force Awakens was more hyped than literally any of these other movies.
Like, Force Awakens, Phantom Menace are number one and two.
Maybe not Endgame. I'd say it's pretty close.
Endgame's up there. I think Endgame beats Force Awakens slightly.
Really? I don't think so.
It's in the conversation. Slightly.
You could argue because of the opening weekend, it was massive. I think the only acceptable answers for number one are Phantom Menace, Force Awakens, and Avengers Endgame. Like,
yeah, I don't disagree, because at eight they have Age of Ultron, and like, who the fuck was excited? I mean, no, I know, right?
Because
like,
the first Avengers wasn't even like super well received. They're like,
oh, you guys aren't gonna believe number 10. I'm just gonna put one word out there, Snyder, and let you take a guess.
BVS? Don't say the Snyder Cut, not the Snyder
BVS.
Cut.
Batman versus Superman, the 10th most anticipated movies of all time, according to
No, I can somewhat.
It was hyped.
BBS,
it was hyped.
Not in that conversation.
Wrong, but
they just ignore the Phantom Menace. Like, people were waiting in line for 10 days.
I cannot believe they ignore. I mean, like, statistically speaking, it is probably one most anticipated to submit movies. Number one, Morbius, not playing.
Well, it's like what Lana came in the comments said. He said Force Awakens is still the highest domestic gross. Like, it still holds that record. And how is it already all the way up to number seven on the list?
Yeah,
that's ridiculous. And the fact that there's so many of those Marvel movies, I'm like, no, not
well,
even
what's
close.
Interesting,
like, Endgame is the only one.
Endgame like had 100 million more in its open weekend, which you could argue is a bigger indication of excitement and hype. But like, Force Awakens' run is only rivaled by Avatar in terms of like after weekend box office drops.
Yeah.
No, it's
like,
consistent.
I think there was a stat that saying, like, if you look at the box office from the first weekend and the second weekend, you should usually expect around like a 60 to 70% drop. And The Force Awakens had like 50, which was insanely good. And if you look at Avatar, it had like 1%, which is like unbelievably not possible. That's why Avatar made $2.7 billion like 10 years ago, which is
why was that so insane. I'm still confused because like I watched
it's really the Star Wars of our generation.
Why was it such a big movie though?
Watching that movie in 3D James was Cameron. Like watching Star Wars in 1977.
Say what you will about the man, James Cameron, man. He's got a way about
sure.
him.
I don't know.
He literally said, I wanted to do the Titanic so I could deep dive. You plebs just wanted to do his thing. Some people are saying Gone with the Wind is one of the most anticipated films of all time, just because, I mean, you got to think this is back. Wow, fuck, when did this even come out? But 30s. Like back then, the 30s, 1939, December 15th, 1939. About 300,000 people came out to Atlanta for the film's premiere. And that's, I mean, 1939, it's a lot of people for a movie. So, I mean, that's probably one of them up there, but
go ahead. Let's look at the stats. Like, adjusted for inflation, technically, Gone for the Wind is like number one box office all time. Mm-hmm. I think number two is the original Star Wars, and I think number three is Avatar. That's funny. I think when you look at the
number three, would surprise me. It would surprise me if Avatar, because of how much it probably cost to even make.
I'm not talking about profits, just like in general, like just box office adjusted for inflation. And I think like there's five Star Wars movies in the top 10, all the originals, Phantom Menace and Force Awakens, in terms of
The lifetime adjusted grosses and, you know, with inflation and everything. Like you said, number one, Gone with the Wind.
Number two, Star Wars. Number three, Sound of Music. Number four, E.T. Number five, Titanic. This one surprised me. Number six, The Ten Commandments. What do you know? Thank you, Jesus. Number seven, Jaws. Number nine, Dr. Zhivago or whatever the fuck. And then we have The Exorcist and Snow White and Seven Dwarfs. And at number 11, believe it or not, Force Awakens. Number 13, Empire Strikes Back. 17, Return of the Jedi.
Where's Avatar? The Phantom Menace.
Avatar is number 15.
How? It made $2.7 billion.
Yeah, lifetime
did
gross.
Did inflation change that much? With
well, under Biden's economy.
Well, okay, so now we got like a 20% rise in this.
Well, I mean, I'm always baffled. How did Titanic make so much money? It's not like an action.
Oh,
like
dude, what are you talking about? I mean, there was so much interest in that movie.
I love that movie. Don't get me wrong. I actually really like Titanic, but I don't understand how it could like top The Force Awakens in terms of box office. It came out 15 years beforehand. Just like it's like a romance movie that's cool. Like
it's funny, Goldman, that you say like it doesn't make sense about like Avatar, because I go to this new list and literally the number one is yet again Gone with the Wind. Number two, Avatar. Like there's a huge jump because it says that it made $3.3 billion in the box office total. Mm-hmm. Next one after that is Titanic, $3.2 billion. And you know what's funny? That greedy motherfucker, George Lucas, I remember him specifically being like, oh, you know, you're never going to beat Titanic. Like, that came out in 97. That is probably the entire reason he did the special editions and was like, you know what, James, you wanna make all that money? I'm going to be the big bitch for back again.
Yeah, but, like, I would love to do, like, research on that. Just, like, because Avatar, you know, it had, like, revolutionized 3D, really. Like, Titanic, what did it do? It's a good movie, but in terms of making that kind of money... Like, and it's a long movie too. It's like 3 hours, right?
It did it though. I mean, people went to go see that. You know what did it for Titanic too, I think, is that they came out with like another thing later on, like either a special edition version of it or something like that. Like they just kept it in theaters.
Oh, Endgame did that too for a bit. Like, yeah, it's like a 5 minute extended cut or something because they like, wanted to beat Titanic. Mm-hmm. Which is
when I look at like all the highest grossing movies ever, like everything makes sense on that list besides Titanic. Like. Avatar revolutionized movie making.
Titanic makes a lot of sense. I mean, that's a huge story, and just like
it's a love story that doesn't have much action. Like,
yeah, but it doesn't need to. I mean, if they made a movie about COVID, I mean, they're gonna make plenty of them. But like, if they made an actually good movie about COVID or something really impactful, like I mean, they've done it for like 9/11, but like the Titanic, like that being the situation that it was, the history behind that, and then turning it into like this really long epic story. I think nowadays that wouldn't really work, but at the time when the world felt a little bit more innocent, you didn't have access to these kind of like tragedies that we do on our social media and like phones and everything. I think that really did a good job of like showing people like a unique part of history that at the time when it released was not that far off.
I agree. It's a good movie, but like, and I understand the interest in it, but like in terms of like history, like World War II is much more interesting and has a lot more interest than the Titanic, like 9/11 and the Vietnam War. There's like so many more impactful historical events than the sinking of the Titanic, which killed what, like a few hundred people?
How dare you? It's
like,
okay, so I literally looked it up and just said like, why was Titanic the movie so popular? And it's just Google itself says, based on a more basic level, Titanic's popularity had everything to do with its evolution from blockbuster movie to culture phenomenon. It was something you simply had to go see, whether you were young, old, adult, or teenager, except for whoever the fuck, you know, wrote that article, because they did self-deprecation humor right there. This one person says, Titanic was a real ship, and it really did sink on its maiden voyage. Many rich people at the time like almost got on it. It was the most hype thing in the world at the time, pretty much, of 1912, and claimed to be unsinkable because of its disaster. Most people on the ship... I wanted to know why the movie was popular, not what the fuck happened. But anyways, some people were saying Leonardo DiCaprio, love story. It had action and a love story, and so it kind of appealed to both demographics, male and female. And also, that's a disaster movie. People seem to like those disaster movies. You guys remember The Day After Tomorrow?
Disaster movies never make that much money.
I don't know if you've seen Moonfall, sir, but that is a cinematic masterpiece that deserves every fucking dollar. No, that and that stupid Leonardo DiCaprio movie that came out on Netflix like last month, absolutely awful. I mean, what a shit movie. Kyra says Titanic did well because of the spectacle. Leo was a superstar, naked lady, and Cameron was a giant box office draw. This is before the franchise orgies that we have now. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you look at something like The Godfather. It came out to not like much praise, but like the mob loved it, and the mob like really kind of started changing their ways and became more like official and like, you know, wearing suits and ties and being respectable after The Godfather came out. So I think it depends on the time that these movies release. So like looking at it now, 20 odd years later, yeah, I can't imagine Titanic ever doing that well. But in the 90s, yeah, that makes sense.
That's fair. Word of mouth. Helps out.
Well, that should be all the time we have for today's very special episode of the Chatooine show with, what is it, May 4th. May the 4th be with you. I think what's going to be more special is probably Wednesday the 25th when we do the like the episode right before Kenobi comes out. And it's going to be a good week. And not only that, whenever Kenobi does come out, the next Wednesday after that, we're just going to, I mean, it'll probably be like a 2-hour stream, unfortunately, but we'll have a long, long episode about just talking everything that came out at Celebration.
We'll also still have to discuss if Obi-Wan does come out on Fridays every day. Are we going to keep this on Wednesday?
Yeah. I mean, if you guys are in the chat right now, leave a comment. Let's say hypothetically the show releases on Wednesdays and we still do the show on Wednesdays. That makes sense. But let's say if it releases on Fridays, would you guys still want the Chatooine show to be on Wednesday nights? Would you want it to be on Friday nights? I mean, it's we all have conflicting schedules as well, and Wednesday kind of works out for us. But I mean, four people having separate lives. Longa, of course, is, you know, having his family to take care of at the moment, so we don't know when he will come back. But with that said, I mean, there's just we're kind of looking for a best day. I mean, Sundays are interesting, but I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, can you do it permanently? And I think that's the issue that we're having, is finding a permanent day of the week to go for.
We only really need to do it for 5 weeks.
Especially for Kenobi, yeah. Wait, 5 weeks.
Like, after Kenobi, we could technically just go back to Wednesdays, but
until the next year. I'm going to be working until 9, EST, on Wednesdays, starting 2 weeks from now.
Sorry, when Obi-Wan comes out.
Wow.
No, well, so Fridays would be best for me.
Having you on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Great having you on the show. Yeah. Like, I can see, that's the thing is, like, I can move my work schedule around a little bit for this entirely, and not really. I mean, I'll miss like a boxing class or maybe a shift at work. I don't really mind that, but like, I know for me, Thursdays I definitely can't because of one job that I can't really miss. But my other two jobs, I can kind of like move shit around and not care about. But it's just lining that up with you three fuckers.
I don't think our audience cares. It's just drawing in more people that matters.
That's a good point. I mean, we want it to be convenient for them too. It, as Saul Goodman says, it is what it is. That I is need to true. See season 6. I need to see that really bad. Someone spoiled it for me on Twitter, and I'm pretty devastated, even though I knew it was going to happen. But anyways, comment after the stream is over. Leave a like, please subscribe to everyone's channel. If you're watching and you haven't subscribed to Chatooine, what are you doing? Hit that subscribe button, hit the notification, hit that bell icon so you can be alerted when we are about to go live and do some great Chatooine shows. Thank you guys for watching. We will see you all next time, and may the Force be with you always.